again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right and I see the happy countenance of the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing,
That's
brother?
That's a lot of assumptions you got about me. Have you read any of my tweets?
Based on your very happy tweets, yeah. I have nothing else to assume, but things are looking up for the beloved boy.
I think I look at it this way. I wouldn't have picked the strategy we picked, but upon picking the strategy they picked, I think they made the right moves.
I agree, too. I think the Javon Carter signing was an excellent move. I think he's an upgrade over Patrick Beverley. The team played well with an actual point guard at that position, and you know, the more I get into this kid's career and the more I appreciate that he brings it on both sides of the ball, that's something that this Bulls team has been sorely lacking over the last few years since Acme took over, are guys that can contribute on the defensive and offensive end. And I think he can do both.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the one thing you're lacking, maybe that you got a little bit with Beverly, is you can't count on Javon Carter to bring the ball up the floor. You can't count on him to do any point guard stuff at all. And so that's going to put more burden on Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan in the starting lineup to more or less always maintain those capabilities. Unless we start Coby White, I'm of the opinion, I don't know if you agree or not, I would start Javon Carter, even if he starts in a Keith Bogans-like role. And I would try to keep two of White, LaVine, and DeRozan on the floor at all times. And you know, that's kind of how I think I would start it off, but some people may disagree.
I don't agree with that. I think they should just let's start camp and see how they look. If White's taking another jump and he's clearly playing at an elite level, I thought at the end of last year he deserved the starting spot. I thought he was playing that well, and I understand why Beverly had it. He was a vet. He brings a lot of leadership and all that stuff. But, I mean, if Coby deserves it, if they play and he outplays Javon Carter, then give him the starting spot. Like, I think Carter can be fine off the bench also. I do disagree a little bit. I guess you're concerned that he can't be the primary ball handler. You know, that wasn't even the case. I think that's so overblown. I don't even think that was the case when Lonzo was here. When the game's on the line down the last 5 minutes, the ball's primarily going to be in DeMar DeRozan's hands. And if it's not in his hands, it's going to be in Zach LaVine's hands. What you need is that guy who can hit the three and who can bring some defense on the perimeter when you're lacking with rim defense. And that's always going to be the case if Vooch is your center. And that's what he kind of does. He's kind of like a poor man's Lonzo Ball.
Well,
he probably doesn't push the ball as well, and Lonzo is definitely a little bit better in half court as a passer. But I don't think he's awful, and I think he's going to do a workman's job at handling and running the offense.
I don't think he's going to add anything in that role. I agree with you in the last 5 minutes of the game, and even once you get into your offensive sets, that the ball is going to be in DeMar or Zach's hands. I think it just puts more pressure on those guys all game long if they have to bring the ball up the floor and like fight through the pressure of doing that if teams start trapping or whatever. It's just that you can't rely on him to be a ball handler. I think it just adds more pressure on the other guys. To go back to Coby White again, I mean, do you think Manu Ginobili didn't deserve to start?
No, of course.
So what I'm saying is this is a Ginobili-like situation. This isn't I think Coby White's going to be better than Javon Carter. I don't think there's any question of that in my head. All I'm saying is with Zach, Vooch, and DeMar in the starting lineup, you know, one of the big things that Coby brings to the table is the ability to create a shot and the ability to play on ball. And he's just that ability is not going to be heavily utilized alongside those three other guys. Like there's just not enough shot opportunities. Yep. There's not enough possessions when those three guys are on the court. And you need a guy who can do those things to come off the bench. So it's more of just like staggering your thing. And that's why I explicitly said starting Javon in a Keith Bogans-like role, not like, oh, we're going to play him starter minutes and he's going to play 30 minutes and Coby's going to play 18. You know, I expect you know, Coby to play more minutes than Carter. I just want to stagger his minutes when at least one of Zach and DeMar is on the bench. So you're utilizing him the best you can. And you're utilizing Carter the best you can. You know, I definitely could see Coby being in the closing lineup with those guys, and you want all your offensive threats. But, like, managing your offensive threats throughout the game, I think it makes more sense, you know, for Coby to come off the bench and spell people than it does to try and start with that lineup, have no offense coming off your bench, and then, you know, whatever. So we'll see what happens in camp.
Good
but that's my first take thought on it. We'll see how these guys play, though.
Very good point, and I'm sure you're not trying to argue that he's a Keith Bogans type of player, just for clarity for everyone here. Understand that, you know, Keith Bogans was an awful basketball player, and Javon Carter's a good one. I think he's going to do a lot of good things for this team. But I do kind of feel like if the Bulls are going to go more out of Vooch, and you know, according to a lot of what we've read in the press, that, you know, Vooch had a discussion with Coach Donovan about he wants to be more active, get the ball more on in the half, especially in the half court sets, which I guess is fine if it's, especially if it's out of the high post and we can take advantage of his passing. I think Coby White's a really good fit there. And so I guess it kind of depends on, like, how the offense changes, if it changes. If there's going to be more Vooch, I think more Coby is a good alternative guy to have on the court. I think he fits pretty well with Vooch. I'm not sure if Javon does too. I'm entirely sure, because I just haven't seen enough of him. The stats say he would be probably a pretty good fit. But your point is well taken, and a good one, that, hey, you do need a guy like Coby White kind of to run things and kind of be more an initiator for that second unit. That said, I'm hoping Patrick Williams really embraces that role. I think he'll probably end up still starting, because there's really still, you know, the only really true alternative at the four on the team is probably now Torrey Craig, who I'm not as excited about, but I do like the addition. I think he'll be a rotation player. I just hope the Bulls kind of, like, find a way to kind of put Patrick in that role of that bench player who's kind of leading that second unit, because I think that's where he was at his best last year, and I think he'll continue to grow and get confidence in that role.
I don't know what you've seen out of Patrick Williams that makes you think he can be the lead initiator. Like, that's fine. I also like Pat. Like, I guess I think Pat is going to start because Torrey Craig is a vet min player. I also like Torrey Craig, but, like, people are maybe obscenely excited about these two guys coming to the team. Like, Torrey Craig is a 3-and-D guy that got kicked off a team that desperately could use a 3-and-D guy. I mean, like, the Suns didn't want to pay him the minimum. So like, let's not act like, oh, wow, steal of the century. A team trying to win a title just said, like, nah, this guy ain't it at the minimum. He's not even worth a minimum roster spot. We can do better at the minimum. So I like him on paper. And Javon Carter is another guy. He got played out of the Milwaukee Bucks playoff rotation. Like, I also like Javon Carter. I think these were good signings. I'm not trying to down these signings. But let's take a step back and look from a grand total of the amount of talent they have is not really that high. What they do add a lot is fits that we didn't have before and specific skills that we needed. You know, Javon Carter, I think we feel a little bit more confident that his shooting is legit than we do with Torrey Craig. As I think you noted just moments ago on Twitter while ignoring my text messages, Torrey Craig's, you know, career three-point percentage is under 35%. You had a really nice year last year. But just kind of like when Vooch had that 40% season, and I said, hey, there's a good chance this is an outlier because he's only had one in his career. The same could be true of Torrey Craig this year. Like, you don't know that that's a legit season until he puts a couple of those back-to-back. So we'll see how that goes.
No, I agree completely about Torrey Craig. The other thing, too, he'll be 33 in December. It's not like he's
well, it's a one-year minimum anymore. Deal, right? Two-year vetman deal. Like, I mean, who cares?
Yeah, it's I'm totally fine with I'm totally fine with the deal, but I agree with you. Like, the general elation over this move, like he's some kind of fantastic, incredible player. And I'm not trying to diminish him as a player. I think he's going to be a rotation player. I think he'll be fine off the bench, but there's been some, you know, discussions like, hey, is Torrey Craig better at the four potentially than Patrick Williams as a
God,
starter?
I hope not.
Like, oh my gosh, if we're starting Torrey Craig as our four, I think we're in trouble. It's kind of, I guess maybe not trouble,
It's not great.
It's different.
It's really bad for Pat Williams if we're starting Torrey Craig. That's a really bad sign.
Yes, it's a horrible sign. Like, and the thing about him also too, 69.6%. Career as a free throw shooter, like, that doesn't indicate he's a good shooter. Yeah. Like, just because last year he was awesome, and I know he shot great from the corner three on a team that had a ton of offense that he probably was never, no one ever defended him. You know,
you'll get a lot of shots like that on the Bulls, though, too, right?
We're contested.
You'll get a lot of shots like that.
Great, so. Yeah, guys. Out of the two players, I'm far more bullish and excited about the Carter signing because I do feel like when the Bulls have had kind of a point guard, quote unquote point guard, who can shoot the three and defend. I think they've played pretty well over the last, you know, if you look at the time they had Lonzo. And I'm not saying he's Lonzo. He's not in that same tier. And when they had Pat Beverly, when you kind of get that defense and three-point shooting out of that position, I think the Bulls are well served there. So, you know, big picture, I agree with you 100%. Like, I kind of compared this on Twitter, and I didn't even see it, Ricky O'Donnell's tweet, but my general point was I see a lot of similarities to going back to the year when they signed Thad Young and Sato. That was like nothing but this is a disaster, this is a tire fire. They signed those two players when free agency started, and it was just like a kind of like a general little bit of a like a little bit of a relaxation in terms of the anger. I've kind of sensed or seen a similar kind of progress here. Do you agree with that?
I think these off seasons, both you and Ricky independently, came up with a good comparison there, in terms of like you didn't make a big splash, but you got players that would fit in. You got them on reasonable deals. You know, based on what you were trying to do and what resources you had, you should be pretty happy with where you ended up in the long run. Now, I guess we could go back and look, how did that Thad Young and Sato signing go? And, you know, that team didn't really take the step forward after we got those guys that we hoped. And I don't know that this team will either. But if you're going to go on the path they went on, these would have been the two guys I would have targeted prior to free agency. Javon Carter would have been my number one choice at mid-level exception point guard. And Torrey Craig would have been, you know, a good guy. I thought we could get with the biannual exception as a 3-and-D player. You know, one thing I'm going to say is I agree with you. Like, I'm not sure his three-point shooting is for real, and I think we should be suspicious. Obviously, we should be more excited about Carter. He cost, you know, like $7 million instead of the vet minimum. So, you know, like, obviously, he should be a much better player, right? We paid him much more, committed to him longer, et cetera. But even if Torrey Craig's shooting isn't for real, I mean, just, you know, whatever, he still is going to be a great defender. You know, he's still going to add something that we need on the court and provide some versatility. The one thing I'm going to say is, like, you know, if you said, is Torrey Craig better than Javonte Green or Derrick Jones Jr.? Like, I don't know that the answer to that is yes to either of those guys, like, to be honest with you. And, you know, so, like, I guess when I say put this in perspective, like, I don't know, I'd probably say Derrick Jones Jr. is a better player than Torrey Craig. And if Torrey Craig's shooting is not for real, then you're basically back with a guy like Javonte Green or Derrick Jones Jr., like, in that role. So we'll see what happens. I think it was a good move. I'm not trying to rip the move. But he is a vet min guy. That's it. That's all I'm really saying here. It's like, you know, for the vet min, this is probably the best 3-and-D, like, big wing you could possibly have imagined getting. Like, you weren't going to get someone better than this at his price tag. So I think that's fantastic use of the vet minimum on a guy like this. I think that's great. But still bear in mind that vet min guys are usually fringe guys that don't play. And so there's a good chance that, you know, Torrey Craig is like a fringe rotation level type player. Like, that's why he's available at this price. If teams thought he was much better than that, he would have been paid more. So we should also not think he's much better than that.
You brought up a really good point. Like, is he a lot better than Derrick Jones Jr. and Javonte Green? I agree with you. Like, I think in a vacuum, I'd probably rather have Derrick Jones Jr. But the issue is, to me, is I think, you know, Craig's got the size. He's got a little bit more size. I think Derrick Jones Jr. is like 6'5 and probably soaking wet, probably 195.
Whereas probably like 120. He is so skinny.
Craig, maybe even right there. Craig is legit. He's like 6'7. He's bigger and he's like 220. Yeah. That's a massive difference in size. And Javonte Green is, again, he's probably 6'3. I'd estimate 205. So size wise, this was something we needed. And that's why I think fit. Although, in a vacuum, I'd rather have Derrick Jones Jr. as a player for this team fit. Absolutely. I'm very happy with these two signings. So, I guess, you know, what I'd like to get out of you, though, Doug, is, like, I know you were really throwing blow torches to the whole org and to the whole team. I guess, and I've kind of come around to the point, like, right now, like, this isn't a bad team. Like, this is not, like, a terrible team. It's not a terrible situation. And I can actually see this team winning, if it goes in as is, winning 45 to 46 games if things go right, 47 games, getting in the playoffs, 5-6 seed, probably not getting past the second round. You know what? I'd kind of rather have that than have to endure another rebuild. What say you?
If I had to choose between getting to the second round of the playoffs and a rebuild, I would take the second round of the playoffs. I would say there's like maybe a 5% chance at most of making the second round of the playoffs. I mean, you need everything right to go right. to have happen what you have happened, and then you'll play a competitive series in the first round where you're a slight underdog to maybe a significant underdog, depending. Like, I think you'd probably need to capture the 5 seed to have a realistic chance to get out of the first round. And I just think that's like a really fringe outcome for this group. Like, it could happen, but it's a really fringe outcome. And then I think, well, what are you going to do next year? Like, you're, everything is getting worse, not better, with this group. You're going to have to renegotiate with DeMar. That contract, if DeMar plays well, is probably going to be even more expensive. You're going to have to re-sign Pat Williams if you want to keep him. Or you're going to need to find a new starting power forward. And if you keep him, he's going to be more expensive. And you're not really going to have like this like set of rising assets, most likely. So, you know, it's it. You know, what in the best case scenario, I agree. I'd rather have this team than a rebuild. It's just, I think that best case scenario is so unlikely. And then even if it happens, I think it's like 1 year. And then now you're still looking at a rebuild the year after with just even less assets, which is what we're doing this year. This year, we're looking at a rebuild with even less assets. Like, I told you last summer, we should trade Vooch and DeMar. And I thought we could have got, like, good value for them at that point, and we didn't. And now, after missing the playoffs, like, was that season super fun and valuable for you? It wasn't for me. I wasn't like, oh, thank God. Thank God we hung on to these guys so we could win 40 games and miss the playoffs, not keep our pick. Like, this worked out just so great. I'm so happy. Like, no, it wasn't. It was terrible. It was better after the deadline, you know, like we looked like we were on the path to be like the sixth or seventh worst team in the league up until the, you know, the deadline. And then other teams just started tanking harder than we did and while we were trying to win. And so,
well, and Pat Beverly absolutely helped. I mean, things got better.
Yeah, Beverly helped some. I mean, like, I think he's a little overrated, but whatever. I don't want to argue about Beverly. He's gone. It doesn't matter. Point being, like, so this year is going to be the same thing, except what we feel is like the low value now, it's going to be even lower a year from now to trade any of these guys. And you're still going to be stuck in a rebuild scenario. Like, there's nothing sustainable about what they've done so far that's like, oh, well, okay, now these couple things have happened and we're on a path where we could be like 41 wins for like the next 3 years and then have a chance to grow because of XYZ. And you could see like, oh, here's the path to get to the second round later. Like, it's like, all right, if everything falls exactly right, maybe we can make it to the second round once. And then after that happens, we're going to be in a worse position than we are today. And we're going to figure out how we can try and pull off a miracle among miracles to get farther. Like, that's the problem I have. It's just like, there's nothing here that's sustainable or can be built upon.
See, this is where I disagree with you slightly. Let's bookmark this, because this is the next two questions will lead into my counter to the point you just made here. So let's say we flash forward to this year, next year, July 2024, God willing, you and I are on this podcast and we're reviewing the bowl season in which they won 50 games. So let's stop for a second. I was just listening to the great podcast with Ryan Russillo, listening to with Alex Caruso. Just was on. I highly recommend everyone to listen to it. And Caruso, I learned a lot of things in that cast. A lot of things about the Bulls and Alex Caruso overall. Just, it's a great listen. I really enjoyed it thoroughly. And he brought up, they kind of talked, he asked them a question. I can't remember how this came up, but in general, the question was like, what were you thinking about as you saw these other teams progress through the playoffs, like the Heat progress through the playoffs? You won the season series against them. You did well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And his general point was, and I'm probably butchering it, was, I thought about these games that we lost. We lost, and he brought up Oklahoma City. He brought up the two Orlando games. He talked about a home loss to Houston. He's like, last year was kind of frustrating since we did have a lot more wins against good teams, but we lost a lot to teams that we should have beat. And he was bringing up those games. And then as he was saying it in my head, I went to the Cleveland loss. Like, the Bulls had like 5 or 6 losses that were really biblical or epic last year that they should have never lost, especially that Cleveland one where P. Will failed to box out on that last play. And so, in general, his point was, if we would have won those games, you know, we would have been in a little bit better situation, blah, blah, blah. And I know you could probably also say, well, there were games that you won that maybe you got a little bit lucky too. But I think last year it would definitely err on the side.
Luck went against us.
They lost more games than they should.
I agree with you. Luck went against us last year. It was not a lucky year.
So let's flash forward to July next year, and we're doing this show, and I go, Doug, what do you think the three biggest reasons the Bulls won 50 games this year? What would those be? Let's assume they won 50 games. What do you think 1, 2, and 3 are?
Number one, Fred Pfeiffer sold his soul and got 50 wins.
How dare you?
I mean, number one probably is, you know, Zach LaVine has maintained a sustained level of excellence. Number two is that Torrey Craig's and Javon Carter's shooting is legit, and we're able to fix kind of like our shot profile and get a lot more three-point attempts up. And number three is continued health amongst the whole team. Like, we don't have any major injuries.
Yep. Great, great points. And I agree, definitely one to me is the one I agree with 100%. If Zach LaVine continues to play like he did from the All-Star game to the first play-in game, and I highlighted it this week on Twitter that had almost 200,000, you know, views. It was, he played at an elite level, like elite, top 10 offensively, as good as a top 10 player in the NBA. If that continues next year, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, like possibility. I think it is possible this can happen, that he continues that great stretch, then the Bulls are going to win. Like, they're going to win more than they lose. You touch on number two. Yeah, those two guys continue to hit the three. I would agree. I would also add that hopefully Io can improve. It can't shoot any
Io
worse
may not
last
even be here.
Year.
Really good chance he won't be here.
Maybe you're right on that, but good point. And the other big one is Coby White. Coby White needs to continue at a 41% rate, which is what he shot from the All-Star break to the end of the season. I thought Coby played fantastic down the stretch. If that continues. And then the third one is health. You brought up health. The good thing is two of the players on the team, Vooch, their key guys, DeMar DeRozan, have had careers of remarkable health. Hopefully that continues. And Zach's a little bit less so, but you know that continues with health. I do like our chances at least winning like 44, 45 games, and then you can get a little bit lucky to get up to 50.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Like, I agree. Like, there's a lot of reasons to think we could win 44 or 45 games. I think that's fine. Like I said, it's just, to me, it's like, all right, let's say we win. Sorry, you had 2 points. So one was we got to 50 wins. Why did it happen? Was there a second piece to this you were going to bring up?
Yes.
Right, so go with your second piece before I distract you.
In order for that to be done, though, I think it would require some teams around them, skill-wise, to take a step back. So, like, looking at the Bucks, I think we both agree the Bucks are going to be better. The Celtics are going to be better. They're still going to be top three in the Eastern Conference, both of those teams. The Sixers were the third team. Does that look like a great situation right now? Like, I think that team could have a drop-off, maybe even possibly significant.
Yeah, depending what happens, Cavaliers, there's definitely a big risk there. They're in a weird offseason right now, and there's a lot of question marks on what will happen.
The Cleveland Cavaliers are, I think, going to be good again. They're good.
They had
team.
A great offseason. They're going to be even better.
They'll be better than the Bulls. So those four teams I mentioned, probably still better. From this point down, right now, I think the Bulls are right there. So I'm talking about the Knicks. I'm going to say the Heat. Now, obviously, if they bring in Dame Lillard, the situation changes completely. They lost Vincent, who was a key part of their team. They lost Strus, who was a key part of their team. Right now, the Heat are worse, significantly worse. Jimmy Butler is older. I don't think they're miles ahead of the Bulls. I don't. With losing those two players.
Not after their
losses. Are the Knicks like a miles better than the Bulls right now? No. The Nets, the Hawks, the Raptors, the Pacers, the Wizards, the Magic. Like, some of those teams are definitely better, but I think we're right there with those teams, Doug.
I think
right?
We are in the mix with those teams. I think it's kind of like, you got to wait to see what happens with Miami this offseason. Like the rest of it. That's like such a huge question.
No doubt.
If like you said, if Dame goes there, then they clearly vault clearly ahead of us. You know, Brooklyn and New York, I think it kind of just depends. Like, I could see them maybe being better than us. It's not hard for me to see Orlando taking a big jump forward and being better than us.
True.
Like, we're in the mix with all those teams. Like, I agree with you. Like, we're in the mix with all those teams. And I'd say a couple of them. Like, right now, if I was just to say, where would you put the Bulls? I'd say probably seventh. I'd say the Bucks, the the four teams you mentioned are like clearly ahead. And then I'd say there's like another group of like five teams. And it wouldn't shock me if we ended up being the best of those teams. But it wouldn't shock me if we ended up being the worst of those teams either. Like, and yes. I guess we'll yes. probably be in the middle. Like there's just not like not a huge difference. Like luck will start to play a big factor in which of those teams emerges. Like whose young guys step forward, who stays healthy, who just has more breaks during the season. Like in that kind of like tier, we'll kind of determine who comes out on top. And like things I'll just say that are like less predictable right now. And so I would say, yeah, I'd probably put the Bulls like seventh right now. I think I would view their total upside as like five. Like it's hard for me to make a case for them being better than five. And their total downside is probably around 10. Like I don't think, because I think they'll just keep trying to win now. Like I don't think they'll go like start tanking. Whereas I think in other teams, if they get bad, they'll start like purposely losing. And I don't think like nothing the Bulls have done shows me that they would do that. So I think like we're probably a downside is like 10. So I mean, we're probably in the 5 to 10 range, you know, for this. And I'd say like seven is kind of like where I would project us. And it's a little early right now. The off season's not entirely over, but I would say like 44 wins seems about what I would predict right now.
Agreed. Now let's go a year out and let's say the Bulls finish 33 to 37 wins. What were your top three reasons for their fall off?
Number one is injuries. Like if we lose that many games, someone got hurt. Number two is just
likely Zach.
Number two is just like someone just what like the chemistry just fell apart. Like guys were just like, we've been together 3 years now and we had like some rough patches and then they were just like F it and whatever, quit on the coach. You know, like just how sometimes teams just combust. Like that would be one of the other reasons that could happen. It's really those. It's like one of those two things. I don't think anything else is gonna talent wise. I don't think they're gonna be that low unless one of those two things happens.
I agree 100%. I guess to me the likelihood. What I wanted to get back to is I think you've kind of hammered this home. Hey, there's a ceiling on this team, and this is the one point where I kind of disagree. I don't feel like our young players, and when I say Coby White, and when I mean young players, I'm talking about Coby White, Patrick Williams. I guess we got to wait and see what happens to IO. I'm not high on Daniel and Terry, and I'm not high on the new draft pick, but just primarily Williams and White. I don't feel like the young players with other teams at that level right now are miles ahead of the Bulls. Like, look at the Raptors. Are the Raptors young players? Scotty Barnes is probably, if you're going to draft those three, he's definitely probably the guy you would want. I didn't think he was incredible last year. I don't feel like he's, man. Like, if at the end of next season, Patrick Williams is than Scotty Barnes, I'm not going to be
I think the
shocked.
Raptors are in the same boat. I'm not going to be Bulls, like, wow. Worse, actually. So,
why do you say that?
The Raptors are the Bulls of last year.
Why would you say that?
They have absolutely no one on their team that can shoot. Like, they don't really have any great isolation
That's
scorers,
true.
Actually, unlike the Bulls. They just lost their like head coach, who I thought was actually really great, even if he graded on players. I just think the Raptors are, you know, they've Masai Ujiri has really had, I think, a few years run of just absolutely tragically bad GMing, like hanging on to guys and then watching them leave for nothing. Like they ended up losing Kyle Lowry for nothing.
Yeah.
Ended up losing Fred VanVleet for nothing. They ended up losing Kawhi Leonard for nothing. That one they probably couldn't have helped. You know, just hanging on to guys. And actually, we're doing the same thing. But I think they're going to run into that with OG and Anunoby, you know, this year. And Pascal Siakam as well. Like, they kind of maybe should trade them. They're kind of caught like half between some young players and a bunch of old players. And they don't know what they're going to do. And they don't think they get good enough value. So they hang on to the guys and then they just lose them for nothing. Or they're forced to massively overpay them in free agency. And then, like, they didn't want to pay Fred VanVleet his money, so they lost him. And you know, kind of same with Lowry. And so, either way, I don't think much of the Raptors this year. Maybe that was too much time on the Raptors. I think they're going to suck this year.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say here is my point here for ceiling for the Bulls. The other reason they would win 33 to 37 games, in my opinion, was the one of the teams below them, or actually three or four of them below them, actually took a significant jump. Those teams I'd identified would be the Pistons, the Magic, the Pacers, or the Raptors. Those are the four teams I think have legit talent that can actually, oh my gosh, these guys are suddenly really good, or they're getting better because they're young players. But if you look at each of those teams, I don't think they're miles ahead of the Bulls, Kobe White and Patrick Williams. That's why I'm saying.
I don't think teams are going to all get better than us. I don't think talent wise we're going to be that low. I don't even see that as a possibility. This third reason you're having, we're not going to have like seven teams that like leap us in talent. It's just going to be injuries or we fall apart.
Okay, that's good. Good. So like, big picture here, I think we're both in agreement. Like the Bulls are probably a seventh. Probably right now, the seventh best team.
Your lucky number.
Depending on how their young players, depending on how their young players progress, Williams and White specifically, I really think there's an opportunity for them to get up to five, maybe even four. And if they don't progress, and we see more of the same from Patrick Williams and Kobe White regresses a little bit and starts playing like he was 2 years ago, then we'll be 9, 10, or 11. It's not a terrible situation. I guess that's my bigger point here is like, I hear all these guys, this is hell, this is awful. I don't agree with that. I just don't. I'd rather be here than going through another rebuild and blowing it up hoping we get lottery luck. All right, what say you?
Okay, we just won 47 games. We were the sixth seed, 46.
46.
Whatever.
46 we win. Oh, you're talking about imaginary scenario. Go ahead.
This year. We win 46 games, a little bit above what we predict. We make it to the sixth seed again, and we lose in six games to Cleveland in the first round. Represent ourselves, you know, kind of okay, but like whatever. Clearly, we're not as good. Say that happens, okay? So I think we would say right now, sitting here today, that maybe isn't the best case outcome, but it's a good outcome. It's like better than what we would predict, maybe. Like, we're both predicting seven, and so I say we do a little better than that. You know, things go pretty well, and we get six.
Okay. All
right. Now you're in free agency. Pat Williams now demands $30 million a year because he's improved. And that's just the rate for a guy like him now. And DeMar DeRozan has another all-star season, you know, because we did well, and so he has another all-star season. And now he wants, like, $45 million a year. Or something like that. He's been an all-star 3 years in a row. You're basically sitting on the second apron of the tax to bring these guys back to try to maintain your team that just lost in the first round. Do you think our ownership would do it? Pay like $50 million in salary and luxury tax? No. And then so what are you going to do now?
Start out by saying that Patrick Williams is going to earn $30 million a year. That is a fantastic sign because he's nowhere near that player right now. And this was a debate I seen internally. I saw Marquet post, like, is Patrick Williams worth, I don't remember the context, but it was basically $20 million a year. I'm like, are you freaking insane? There's no way he's even remotely played around those numbers. There's no way if he was an unrestricted free agent, he'd get remotely those numbers on the open market. No one would pay him that amount of money. He hasn't remotely proven he deserves it. He was benched at the end of last season. Yes, he can hit the three. Yes, he's got a great, you know, basketball athletic body, but he's not a $20 million a year player at most.
But 14, let's just say 15. That Houston is dumb and they're like, wow, this guy can shoot the three and play defense. I'm going to give him $30 million. Okay, so we let Pat Williams walk. Okay,
until just, you just see him you, deserve it.
I'm not trying to get into a debate about the players. Okay, so you let Pat Williams walk because you don't want to pay him 30. You paying DeMar 45?
It depends on how long the contract is.
3 years.
How many years is it?
3 years and 140 million.
If he approaches what he's played the last 2 years.
Well, say he does whatever he did last year. I think he just repeats last year. All-star performance, kind of like fringe all-star.
Yeah, that's a 40. He's a 40. That's a 40 to 40. He made the all-star team. He's a 40 to $45 million player. That's what the market calls for a player of that caliber.
Just won 46 games, loses a key contributor and starting power forward that they can't replace. You don't have the mid-level exception anymore. You have the taxpayer mid-level exception. So you can only get a guy for 2 years and $5 million if the team will even pay the tax. And DeMar is now you know, you're paying him for what, like years 35, 36, and 37? Got to assume by the end of that deal, it's a huge albatross. So you're never going to get anything back from him. Your team is markedly worse next year because you just lost Pat Williams. Where are you at? So, you know, going forward, now you're like, all right, well, our first round exit team, even though we were kind of happy we won 46 games and had what we consider a good season, now it looks like it's probably a 41-win team with a player that signed to a future albatross deal because we couldn't not sign him, but we also then had to pay him so much, and we know he's going to decline just due to age. Like, where are you then? Like, that's the problem. Is like, and this is if I described a really good outcome for this year. After this year is over, you're still stuck in this really rough spot. That's why I said there's not a sustainability to what we're doing. And that's why it's hard. So that's the only problem I have. It's like, I don't see the path from here to build onto this to get to something else based on the salary construction of the roster, the age of the key contributors, the amount of up-and-coming pieces we have, and like what I perceive their upside to be. And so it's like if I thought like, hey, we have a sustainable 45 and we have like a bunch of incoming draft picks, or we have, you know, a good amount of room under the luxury tax where we can add people or we can do whatever, or we have a bunch of tradable pieces we can move in and out, you know, then that would be a little different to me. But that is the tough piece of where we're at. Is it's like, you can sell me on, if everything goes right, maybe everything goes right, we could be the 5 seed. And if things go, like, I could see the 6 seed. Like, I don't even think that's that crazy that we could be the 6 seed. But then after the season, I just feel we're just destined to be in a much worse spot next season. And so, like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Like, we're so excited about the 5th seed or the 6th seed. And that's if everything goes well. Like, you're a Zach injury away from him being an albatross and you winning like 33 games.
Yeah, that's a key. That is the key point. I think that's a key danger there, is Zach taking a turn for the worse in terms of injury. What you're getting around to, and out of all these scenarios, is how good is Coby White and Patrick Williams?
Not that
their
good.
Their ceiling is higher than we
Not
expect.
That good. These guys have played a ton of minutes.
I disagree with that.
Guys who play this many minutes generally don't get a lot better. Lauri Markkanen was better than Pat Williams right now when he was a rookie. Like 10 games in, he was playing at a higher level than Pat Williams is after 3 full seasons.
Yeah.
Coby White, like last year was his worst statistical year in the league. Now, we all agree he got better. Everyone who watched him, like his ball handling looks sharper. His defense is better. You can see like the iterative improvements in his game. Everything looks better. But like, look at his stats. They're not great. They're not great on any level. Like, and he's played a ton of minutes. He's played 4 years. He's gotten good minutes for 4 years. Like, these guys do not have, like, whole other levels they're going to get to. Like, I agree they will improve iteratively. They'll continue to improve over the next couple of years. But those improvements are going to be small. They're not going to, like, change the type of player they are. Neither of these guys is going to go from where they are to star player.
That's true.
It's true. I can't say it.
I think it's, you're right. You're likely
I'm
right.
Overwhelmingly likely right. I agree. There's a chance. I agree. There's a chance. But like, if you looked at every player who's played as many minutes of them as them, who was like around their level, like say fringe starter, high bench player, like, you know, maybe on a normal team, the 5th or 6th best guy, like around that level, how many of those guys ever became the 1st or 2nd best guy in a team? And it's probably 1% or less. So it's overwhelmingly likely. You know, I'm a stats guy. Like, it's overwhelmingly likely these guys don't make that kind of leap. And certainly for Coby White, like, he doesn't have the athletic profile or anything like that that would indicate it's even a remote possibility. Like, no one ever looked at Coby White like, oh, this guy's got star ceiling.
I don't know. Coby really impressed the crap out of me at the end of last year. I really felt like in every aspect of his game, he was significantly better. Not just better. And if you look at his effort in both play-in games, he was probably the 2nd or 3rd best player on the team. He really performed well. And he didn't get a massive chance. And, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know all the details of what's going on.
He was a guard-packs guy. But that's what it was.
Yeah, is he going to be a star? Like, I can absolutely see Coby White being a key rotation player on a team
He's, that wins but the yeah, title. Fine. He can be the sixth best guy on a team that wins the title. That's not changing the direction of this franchise.
Maybe even better than that. That's not
changing the direction of this franchise. When you have to lose DeMar DeRozan, Kobe White being your fifth or sixth best player is not changing the direction of the franchise.
It depends on two things. Zach LaVine stays healthy and plays at the level he was at the end of last year. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I think there's an actual – I think actually I'd put that at 50-50. That's a big plus in our direction. And number two, if Patrick Williams gets significantly better. Now, we're probably on the lower end of the fan base with him. You know, Kobe White, I do believe in more than most. I think he's taken significant steps. But I agree with most people that Patrick Williams is so important to the future ceiling of the team. Hopefully we'll see some improvements. Because it usually happens in year three or four. He's still 21. He'll be 22 when the season
starts.
He's
only 22.
And he's going to get significantly better. He's only 22.
Next year, he'll only be 23.
20, 21, 22. You're not a believer, I know. Hey, I do want to go in one more point before we wrap this up. We've already been talking for 40 minutes. 45 minutes. Can't believe this. Let's talk about I want to talk a little bit about this whole deal with Dame. Because it bothers the heck out of me. You know, you got all the Jimmy stands coming around talking about – he wants to go, first of all, to play Miami with his buddy Bam Adebayo. He loves Bam. And then, like, the reporting was Jimmy said the last thing he told the organization, I want the number one priority to try to get Dame. And I'm like, number one, why is this even being reported? Like, that's not recruiting. That's not anything to be talked about or, you know, like, it's just logic. Any superstar would probably say that. Hey, you know what? If you're going to get better, number one priority, let's get in one of the top eight guys in the league. That said, I kind of think this whole situation sucks. Like, Miami doesn't deserve him. They haven't put enough assets together to get him. Just because they're located in a warm climate, like, what the hell? Why? It's like the Beal situation. There's no way Portland's going to get remotely equivalent assets in return because he's saying I only want to play for this team. Like, how do you feel about this entire situation? Because if it keeps on going down this path as a league, we're going to have a serious problem as a league.
Did you hear the Bill Simmons podcast about this topic? I think it was with Ryan Russillo on it.
Yes.
So I'm gonna quote like a little bit.
Love that show.
I think this was Ryan Russillo's point, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember if it was Bill or Ryan who said it, but I think it was Ryan. I like both those guys. He said, effectively, us complaining about this is like our parents' generation complaining about how free agency was going to ruin the league. Like, look, it just is what it is. You know, like these are, you know, a player who's making $250 million on his contract, $250 million, using whatever leverage he has to get done what he wants. You have this franchise that's worth $3-4 billion using whatever leverage it can to do what it wants. And, you know, both those sides will probably do whatever is best for them. And so Portland will weigh out whether or not it can find a different offer for Dame to someone else that's better than Miami. Whether it wants to risk just keeping Dame and saying, hey, sorry, we shopped you around, but we're not trading you for nothing. So either sit out and don't get paid or do whatever, like, you know, like play hardball with him. You know, and Dame will either agree to relax the number of teams he'll trade for if he like really just needs to get out. You know, or maybe he'll play hardball and he'll just sit out or whatever. Like whatever it is, he'll just play out. Like, this is one of those things like billionaires versus millionaires, you know, who have just all of them have unlimited money and will fight out this type of situation. There's no deserves in this. There's just whatever the market will bear. And like in this case, if you have a star player, it's tough to trade him right now because all the teams that would be looking to add star players already mortgaged their futures for different star players. There's not a lot of teams left that could take on someone and offer up all the kinds of packages we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years. And so, yeah, Miami might get Dame for less than what other guys went through. The Suns definitely got Beal for less. Now, Beal, I think, was an albatross. And I would not be excited about Beal. But even so, he still went for less than you would have thought, right? So that just might be the state of the market right now. Like complaining about it, like, oh, this Miami doesn't deserve it. There's no deserves. There's just what you could get. If Giannis said, you know what, I want to play in Chicago, I'm only playing in Chicago, and we just said, all right, well, we can only trade you our 27 and 29 picks for him, and then so we got Giannis for those two picks, I wouldn't be complaining that we didn't deserve it. It would just be like, oh, hell yeah, we just got Giannis for two first-round picks. That's ridiculously awesome. Like, it just, whatever happens, happens. It's just the way it goes. People want to go to certain places, you know, and then those sides all argue whether that's enough leverage. You know, Portland will decide whether Miami's crap offer is good enough.
If you want to go to one of those places, then get yourself in a situation where you have the freedom to make that
or
choice.
Just demand out.
Don't in
just
year
demand
one
out
or
and
two.
Demand they trade you there.
No, yeah, but don't. It's because it's insanity.
It's not insanity if it works, Fred.
Two.
This is these are like I said, these are billionaires just fighting with whatever leverage they have against each other. Like, you just have to accept that that's, like, fine, you don't like it and you want to yell at clouds, go ahead, yell at clouds. But it's the reality of how things are.
It's not clouds.
Tell Damian Lillard to get off your lawn. I don't care. Like, but this is the way it is. That is the leverage and the dynamic that has happened. The players, the star players have realized that they have tremendous power to do whatever the hell they want. And they do because they just drive the revenue of the entire league and they drive the revenue of these franchises.
I just hope the situation, I can't remember what show it was, the situation mirrors what happened last year with Donovan Mitchell, where everybody thought that the Knicks had all the power, they held all the cards, that's where he wanted to go, there was no question that he was going to the Knicks, it was just a matter of time before the staring contest was over, and they agreed on the collection of assets to send over there, and lo and behold, here come the Cavs with a better offer, or even equivalent offer, and sorry, he's going to Cleveland for the next few years. I hope that same situation happens here. Because everything I'm hearing for like what's going to Portland is a joke. Tyler Hero is not a great... His contract
Why do you
is
care?
Not great. He's a fine,
Why are you emotionally invested in it? Like you're emotionally invested in the...
Just but number one, because I don't want the freaking Heat to be good.
So
that's number
it.
One.
So
I don't
really
want another good team
to
coming
you and
to Eastern
Mark
Conference when they don't deserve
the
it.
Jimmy Butler. You just don't want the Jimmy Butler argument to have some more ammunition to it so you can win a Twitter war with Mark. That's why we care about this. If he was fighting his way to like San Antonio, you wouldn't give a shit.
I think San Antonio would
deserve
it because
deserves.
They collected
assets
deserves. To make a move like
if
this.
If he was just like, I'm going to go to, fine. If he was fighting his way to like the Charlotte and they weren't going to give up anything, you would not care. You only care because this is some dumbass Twitter fight you have with Mark. That's why you care. That's why you care about this.
I'm not gonna
that's
take
completely
this. No way.
That's
not
why.
Why
you
it's
because
I can't stand
this.
The
you
heat.
You don't want Jimmy Butler to have Damian Lillard.
I can't stand
you
the heat.
Don't want him to
I don't
go
want
far. To. Like, and that's it. Like, and I don't care. Look, I do not give a crap about Jimmy Butler. I don't care if the Heat win the title with Jimmy Butler. I don't care if the Heat finish 14th in the conference with Jimmy Butler. It just does not matter to me. It's like it's so irrelevant. Whatever happens, happens. But that's why you're mad about this. You're mad just because it's Miami and it's Jimmy Butler.
I'll have to contemplate and further elaborate on the reasons why I'm mad about this in the next episode. We're already at 50-plus minutes, and I got to get going. We got to head out. But I do want to wish you a happy 4th of July to you and your family and all the listeners. Thanks for everybody listening to the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity back into the garage. Until next time, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, one more thing. Mo Bamba. Do you want him to be part of this team, yes or no?
Irrelevant. If he comes on the minimum, I'm not going to cry about it. But like, I'm not like, oh, thank God we got Mo Bamba if he does. It's just minimum players aren't relevant to me, generally speaking.
He sucks.
I know you hate him.
He sucks. I don't
Fine.
Hate him.
I know
him.
You
I
hate just, him as a player.
Again, he's
I'm
a terrible
not saying
basketball
you hate
player.
Him as a person. I don't think either of us know anything about
and
Mo
Bamba. And I was right about everything I stated about him back in those years. I'm sure he's a fine young gentleman.
Maybe, I don't know.
But as a basketball player, it's a joke that guy was ever talking
about. He could be terrible.
About.
I don't know.
Maybe
he's
an
awful
maybe
guy.
He's not.
I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? Yeah. I think the odds are likely that he's a good dude. But that said, let's just move on from Mo Bamba. We don't need him. We don't need a bad basketball player here in Chicago. We got plenty of those. Until next time, let's bring it in.
Just rip on the whole
let's,
team.
What do we say? Go Bulls.
Go Bulls and all our terrible basketball players. You think you're going
to... There's a few guys on the team I don't like.
All right, go Bulls.
No, you're right. No, overall, the team, I'm very happy with where they're at, and I think it's going to be a great year. Let's get positive. Happy 4th of July to you all, and we'll talk again soon. Go Bulls.